Damn, son, where'd you find this?
You're listening to Penguin Radio.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your heart, running in motion.
Going on in the league right now, it's, wow, Aaron Judge has really just reshaped the game of baseball. He came in as a 25-year-old, 6'8", 270-pound rookie, and through 3 or 4 months has just completely changed the way we are viewing the game of baseball. It's quite amazing, actually. Guys, he is batting 330 with 30 home runs, close to 60-something RBIs, and he has just completely transcended the game of baseball, taking over as the face of the game for the New York Yankees. And I just wanted to start off this show by talking about a comparison that I saw some sports writer talking about the other day. He said, when Tiger Woods first came onto the golf scene, it was like nothing we had ever seen before, right? Tiger, this unicorn almost, and that's what they call players that we've never seen before in basketball, came into golf and he was hitting the ball farther. He was more accurate. He was a better putter. He worked harder than everyone. He had this military mentality and he was in better shape and all of these things, and you had just never seen anything like it. It was, you know, you had these white, unathletic guys, and they were winning all the major championships, and all of a sudden this young, fit kid comes in, and he wins the Masters at 21, and all of a sudden he takes over the golfing world. Well, what's different about Tiger Woods? Well, he was athletic, right? Yeah, and he worked harder, and he was bigger, and he was stronger, and wait, that kind of sounds like Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is bigger, he's stronger, he has a great work ethic, he's humble, he's all these things. Well, okay, you go back, and now Bill Russell. Bill Russell, he came into a league with a bunch of not-that-in-shape white guys playing basketball, and, you know, he's 6'10", 6'11", he's in better shape, and he starts dominating, and he wins 11 championships, and Mike Tyson comes in, and he's bigger and hits harder than everyone else. And do you see what I'm getting at? Aaron Judge is reinventing the game of baseball. And just by his sheer physical and athletic ability, he's 6'7", 6'8", 280 pounds, and is just a freak of nature out there. It's not competitive with the other players, because how are you supposed to compete when you're 180 pounds and 5'9" and or 5'10" and you're Robinson Cano, and you might be able to hit 30 home runs, but it's going to take a lot more out of you to hit a home run than it is for a guy that weighs 270 pounds and can bench press 400 pounds and squat 600 and whatever. Aaron Judge is the Tiger Woods, the Bill Russell, and the Mike Tyson of modern day baseball. He's coming in as a completely different type of athlete. And he's changing the game, whether we like it or not. And I think a lot of people do like it. They like to see that a guy can actually come in and naturally hit home runs. They like to see that baseball is an actually athletic sport again. You just don't have these skill player position guys from, you know, the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico or stuff that go through the academies. No, you have an American, big, born and raised superstar that can come in, that can be the face of your league. And you know what? In the biggest moments, in the home run derby, when everyone wants you to win, everyone's betting you to win, everyone's putting you in their brackets, you actually do it. We haven't had a guy like that in Major League Baseball in forever. And that's what it needs. That's what the game needs. And that's where I wanted to start off today. Because baseball's dying. Financially, it's doing great. Yes, it is. They're making a lot of money. They have the local TV deals with all these stations. Here we have CSN Bay Area. They're making good money, you know, paying a lot of money because there's 162 games and sports are the only things that sell on TV anymore. But as a whole in this country, baseball's dying. It is. The NFL is king. People love the NBA. People love college football. People love, you know, March Madness. And baseball is kind of like the ugly little stepsister of sports now. You watch it during the playoffs, maybe at the All-Star break. You kind of follow it if your team's doing well. But if they're not, you tune it out. You go to maybe a game with your kid, but now that's kind of expensive. So you never know. Baseball has needed for quite some time someone that can transcend the sport. That's what Aaron Judge is doing. Little kids everywhere are buying Aaron Judge jerseys. My friends who don't care about baseball whatsoever know who Aaron Judge is. They'll show me a video of him hitting a, you know, 495-foot home run. They don't care about baseball. They've never watched it more than a Giants winning a World Series game. So Aaron Judge, surely by being different and coming into a game where he is different and he's viewed as different, is actually changing the game. And in a league that right now, you know, it's dominated by the Dodgers, the Astros, two young teams on the rise, baseball is becoming young again. And I hope that the fans realize that it's no longer this old man's game, at least on the field. You have these young superstar players, headlined by Judge, but you have Harper, you have Trout, you have Correa, you have Lindor, you have all these, Bryant, you have all these guys, and they're all, you know, 25 and under, and they're the future, and we better start appreciating that. And just like Aaron Judge, these other guys coming up, they're going to be bigger, they're going to be stronger, they're going to be faster, and they're going to make baseball more athletic. And I think that's going to make a more entertaining product. Also, going on in baseball today, just thought I'd mention this. The Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, World Series champions last year, made a trade for White Sox star pitcher Jose Quintana. They traded Eloy Jimenez, I think I got that name wrong, Dylan Cease, Matt Rose, and Bryant Fleet to the White Sox for Jose Quintana. It's a good move by the Cubs because they needed another starting pitcher. Arrieta and Lackey's contracts will be up at the end of the year, but I wouldn't call it a great move. One, Quintana has always been looked at as a great starter, underrated, but his stats this year are not as great. He is 4-9 with a 4.49 ERA. That's not great. Even in the inflated season that we're having right now, it's still not great. Also, it was a move out of desperation, it feels like, for the Cubs. You know, they have not been doing great all year. They've been stagnant, just not really getting it done. And I feel like they jumped the gun before the All-Star break, sent one of their top prospects, and I don't really know if it's going to light a fire under these young kids. I think you just had to stay through, you know, feel out the process. Look, there's obviously going to be the hangover from last year. It was such a big deal. The World Series was so great. It was such a big moment for Chicago that you had to know that this year just couldn't replicate it. You can't replicate that energy. But if they stay through, they push through the process, I would have had to think that this move was just kind of unnecessary. And just like that, we're at the end of our segment. You're listening to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams on Penguin Radio, Dominican University, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. Thank you for listening.
find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. And we come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop it, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body. First day, well, you and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat. Fill up your bag and I fill up the plate. We talk for hours and hours about the sweet and the sour and how your family's doing okay. And leaving, getting a taxi, kissing the backseat, tell the driver make the radio play. And I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. On my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body.
Welcome back to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, and you're listening on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM and RadioDominican.edu. Joined now by my really good friend, Nick Moliaris. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Taylor. How are you doing? I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, that's great. So Nick wanted to come on today. He wanted to challenge me. He wanted to talk a little NBA offseason action. He, like me and a bunch of our friends, are huge NBA nuts, and he wanted to talk about the West getting stronger. Nick, what do you think about Paul George, Chris Paul, all these guys, you know, loading up on super teams in the West?
I'll wait on my Paul George theory, so I'll start with Chris Paul. I do not like that deal at all for the Rockets. They have two ball-dominant guards in the backcourt. I mean, a lot of people are trying to tell me that Chris Paul isn't ball dominant and that he makes people better with his passing, but you need the ball to pass the ball. That's how he's effective. He's not a guy that sets screens, blocks shots. I mean, he gets steals, but he passes the ball.
See, I completely agree with that. And also, look, you're looking at two guys on the Rockets, and maybe three now if they add Carmelo Anthony, but that crave the ball and that crave the attention that the ball comes with. Chris Paul, you know what I mean? He was the floor general for the Clippers and before that for the Hornets. Yeah. He has always been used to getting his way. James Harden the exact same way ever since he's been in Houston. It's still always been through him. Now, maybe James Harden this year got a little more unselfish and started passing, but still, in a way, that was kind of for him. He kind of just pulled the Russell Westbrook attitude of, I like my assists.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look at how successful the Rockets were with James Harden running the point guard. He led the league in assists while also averaging 25 points. And Chris Paul is going to take away touches. He's going to take away possessions. He might go isolation once in a while, and that's also part of James Harden's game. I just didn't like that deal at all when I saw that Chris Paul went to the Rockets, especially because they traded him for Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, and a couple bucks.
Yeah, Lou Williams as well. What do you think about Carmelo potentially going to the Rockets as well?
Going back on my ball-dominant theory, I think that would be one of the worst moves in Rockets franchise history. Carmelo Anthony is one of the biggest ISO scorers in the league today, definitely of the past 20 years that I've ever seen. He also really needs the ball. But he's good, and I just don't think it's a good fit for the Rockets at all.
All right. Shifting over to Oklahoma City, what do you think about the Paul George deal to the Thunder?
I've gotten a lot of flack for this opinion, but I think the Paul George to the Thunder was the best deal this offseason, and I think that the Thunder are going to be the 2 seed in the Western Conference behind the Golden State Warriors.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, the Thunder will be the 2 seed.
So you believe that the Oklahoma City Thunder, I believe, was it 5 or 6 seed last year?
6. They played the Rockets.
So the 6 seed, yeah. Are going to jump the Houston Rockets that just added Chris Paul, the San Antonio Spurs, who are a 60-win team, and become the 2nd seed in the Western Conference.
Exactly. Think about how successful Russell Westbrook was basically by himself. I mean, Victor Oladipo was absent for 50 of the 82 games that they played. I mean, he was on the court, but, you know, you could barely tell that he was there. Now they add Paul George, who's a two-way player, and before the All-Star break, he led the league in three-point percentage. He was above 43%, and he's another superstar. And look at what Russell Westbrook would do with Kevin Durant. They went to the finals.
Okay. So would you say that Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant and – well, I mean, I'm sorry, or Russell Westbrook and Paul George are a better combo?
Probably Westbrook and Durant, just because they played together for so long. Paul George is a better defender, so I think adding that on the defensive end with him and Westbrook is pretty lethal, and I think they can match up with anybody in the league now. And they still have Rondre Robertson, who's about as effective offensively as I would be in the NBA.
Yeah.
But defensively, he should be an all-first teamer. I don't know why he's not.
Well, here's the problem with your theory on my part, right? Mm-hmm. The Oklahoma City Thunder were a 6 seed last year, and they basically decided that we're going to let Russell Westbrook play hero ball every single game and pad his stats so he can be the MVP so he can stick it to the league, right?
Yeah.
That so he can stick it to Durant because he's not winning a championship, right?
Yes.
So now you got the ultimate me first, you know, ball hog guy. And you're giving him another superstar to play with, but he had 2 other superstars that he played with in the past, Harden, you know, kind of pre-prime, and Kevin Durant in his prime. It didn't work with either of them. And now you're giving him Paul George, who doesn't necessarily even want to be there. He's kind of has his eyes set on the year after. Right. You don't have a team around them whatsoever. And you're going to tell me that they're going to beat the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets and be the 2nd seed? I don't see that.
I see your point. I see how the Westbrook-Durant era kind of ended. But they made the playoffs every year except for the year that Durant was hurt with that foot injury. That's right. I think just Paul George is that special of a player. He's young. He's great on both ends of the floor. Offensively, he's one of the most skilled small forwards in the league. I've never seen a guy who has his offensive and defensive skill set. I think with no team around him because they traded Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, they still have Steven Adams. Enes Kanter's a good offensive player. He kind of let them down, breaking his arm.
But what I'm saying too is it's not just the fact that Paul George, you know, Paul George is a great player, and I'm not arguing that. Yeah. Do you think him and Russell Westbrook will fit together? Because I personally don't. I don't think Russell Westbrook, I think he's an Allen Iverson type where he can't play with other stars.
I just can't see Russell Westbrook being that selfish. I think that with
but,
Durant.
But we've seen it before.
But Durant is a different player. Durant was better, so Durant was the leading was the lead guy. Now it's Russell Westbrook's team adding Paul George. Paul George is a good player. I think Russell Westbrook sees that and is going to be unselfish and give him the ball.
But do you think Paul George wants that? I think Paul George wants money and he wants L.A. And he wants to be his own star. He doesn't want to be second fiddle to Russell Westbrook now, does he?
What happened when Paul George was his own star in Indiana? They got the 7th seed and he was traded. How did that work out for him? It didn't. He wants to be his own star in L.A.? They have Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. That's not really your own star. You still have young, upcoming rookies.
I see your point there, and it definitely works, and it definitely makes sense. But I don't think him and Russell Westbrook, it's not like super teams today.
Right.
I'll leave it at this. They're formed because these guys are friends with each other for the most part. They like each other, and they feel like their styles of basketball. Doesn't it feel like this was a little forced, that this was a last-ditch effort by Oklahoma City and Sam Presti to be like, look, Russell can opt out in a year. If he leaves, if he goes to L.A. or he goes wherever, then we're screwed. We just let three superstar Hall of Fame players in 5 or 6 years leave our city. We're never going to attract free agents. We need to make a move right now. We can get Paul George. He might only be here for a year, but we'll just roll the dice and see what happens. It doesn't seem like it was a move that was calculated. It seemed like we're going to throw all our chips in the center of the table and see what happens.
I could definitely see that because before the trade went down, I had never heard Oklahoma City being interested in Paul George. That might have been one of the last places I would see him getting traded. Obviously, we heard all the Boston talks, even the Warriors, a lot of Cleveland talk. I definitely get your point how they kind of just said, let's see if we can get him. He may only be here for a year, but I think he's interested in a championship and didn't turn his head at the fact that Oklahoma City maybe he's one piece away.
You mentioned Boston. What do you think about the Gordon Hayward to the Celtics move?
It was expected on my part, and because Brad Stevens was his head coach in college at Butler, they went to the national championship game where he missed a half-court shot against Duke. That hurt. But, yeah, that was expected. I think that they're losing a valuable piece in Avery Bradley in the deal, but they're gaining a guy in Gordon Hayward who's an all-star and will be for a couple years to come. And he might be that piece that they need to dethrone the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference.
So you think they have a chance now with Gordon Hayward to make it at least a series versus Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't get swept with Gordon Hayward. If that series, if you add the team they have now with Cleveland, I don't think they get swept. They may not win, but they wouldn't get swept.
Okay. And finally, for Danny Ainge, there was a lot of speculation this year that, you know, he was going to make a move for Kristaps Porzingis or Paul George, and none of those came to fruition. What do you think is the one single move left for Boston to do with all their assets that would bring them over the top where they would become the powerhouse in the East?
That's a great question. And I think they just made it in signing Gordon Hayward. I do think that the Celtics have a very legitimate chance to make the finals this year. Will they? No, but they have a very legitimate chance, and they could shock some people. I really believe that.
All right. Nick, thank you so much. Nick's going to be with us later in the show. And coming up next, another great friend of mine, Sam Greenville. We're going to be talking a little NFL. You're listening to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest, you can beat the world, you can beat the war, you can talk the guy go banging on his door, you can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock, yeah. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks, you can be a master, don't wait for luck, dedicate yourself and you can find yourself. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah.
walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke. Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. And you're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're standing in the hall of fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions, be truth seekers. Be students, be teachers, be politicians, be preachers. Be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions. Standing in the hall of fame.
Welcome back to In the Zone. I'm your host, Taylor Williams, and I'm joined right now by my friend Sam Greenville. Sam, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Taylor. Very excited today.
Yeah, of course. I've been waiting to have you on for a while now. You've been busy. You were up in Tahoe for the 4th of July, so I couldn't have you on last week.
That's right.
But you made it here this week, and we're going to talk a little NFL action. You excited?
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and get started.
All right. So we're going to start with talking about the Dallas Cowboys because for some reason you have a problem with my fandom.
You know what? The Cowboys are just that team. Everyone seems to join the bandwagon and, you know, quote unquote, they're America's team. But I, you know what? As a Niners fan, I just can't like them. As much as, you know, I like Dak Prescott and how humble he is, I cannot jump on that Cowboys bandwagon.
Well, how about them Cowboys? As Skip Bayless would said. All right. So what I want to start with is, obviously, last year, they had a very good regular season in the playoffs. Not as great. Dak and Zeke, the two rookies from last year, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, had both rookie of the year type seasons. Dak ended up winning the award. So my question to you, will they back up their performance from last year?
You know what? I'm going to be honest here. I think they will have close to a good season as they did last year, but I don't think you can live up to that kind of hype. The 13-3 season with a close to comeback performance against the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, both Dak and Zeke had amazing years, but now that, you know, NFL teams have a year of film and they have a first place schedule, I don't think you can live up to that 13-3 record, especially now with the NFC East, which is very loaded with Kirk Cousins and the Redskins and the always kind of shocking Giants with Eli Manning and his impressive offense and pretty young but talented defense. And I don't think people are giving Carson Wentz his due. I think the Eagles might be a shock this year.
Okay, so if you had to predict a record, and obviously there's a lot of factors that go into that, you thinking around, what, 10-6, 9-7 for them? There's going to be a letdown.
I think it's going to be my median or mean guess would probably be the 10-6 record. But you know what? If depending on how they play against the Giants, it's either going to be 11-5, or if they, you know, perform poorly against the Giants, it's going to be, you know, 9-7. But I'm expecting a playoff berth.
So as a Cowboys fan, obviously I am optimistic, especially in Dak Prescott because he's my favorite player in the league. But being a rational radio host that I have to be sometimes, I do think Dak is going to face some challenges next year. Like you said, the whole league has footage on him. He has a year under his belt, all of these things. I think for Dak Prescott, this is going to be the real learning year. This is going
to
be the
Well, you know what, Taylor, to be honest with you, it's kind of like right now he's at a, you know, a fork in the road. He's got two options. He can do what I like to think the Colin Kaepernick route, RG3 route, or the Russell Wilson route. You know, have a spectacular first year, you know, take the league by storm, you know, make it far into the playoffs or whatever. He can either, you know, continue to, you know, do well and become an elite quarterback and become a top 10 quarterback in the league or yada yada, or he can regress as Colin Kaepernick and RG3 did, unfortunately. But, you know, that's kind of the fork in the road that we're facing with these young quarterbacks now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I also think a lot of these quarterbacks, they come out and when they're mobile quarterbacks, and Dak's not as much of a mobile quarterback, but he can still run, it's a shock and awe type thing in the league now.
Yeah.
That they come out, you know, they have this whole offense built around them, and defenses can't adjust to it within the year, but after they get about a year or maybe half a year worth of games on it in film, they can kind of pick out the little nuances of the game, and all of a sudden these quarterbacks aren't as effective anymore, and a lot of the times the defenses adjust, they start injuring these quarterbacks because, you know, a lot of the time they're mobile and they're on their feet. And that's why I think, like with Kaepernick, RG3, and a lot of these guys coming out now, they're just not as effective after about 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, you know what? I think the one main advantage Dak has, or two, is first of all being a fourth-round selection. That makes you, you know, want to prove yourself quite a bit more. You know, that teams don't really – he has a harder work ethic, and, you know, teams don't really know exactly what he's all about. And also he has that tremendous offensive line that, you know, if you have a good offensive line, you can be the worst quarterback in the world and still do decently.
I completely agree with that. All right, so shifting over to the AFC, do you think that anyone can challenge the New England Patriots this year?
Of course. I think, you know what, Patriots are kind of making their last run. Tom Brady's got probably 3 years left, to maybe two good ones. But you know what? I think the Raiders and Derek Carr and Khalil Mack, that young defense and that explosive offense, really could make a stand this year. And I don't know how far or how well they're going to do, but I think they can make a run at the Patriots, depending on how Derek Carr does and if that Raiders defense has finally evolved with that secondary.
Do you think that secondary has any chance of actually stopping Tom Brady? Because when it really gets down to it, look, Tom Brady's going to throw the ball where he wants to throw the ball. And if your secondary cannot stop him with all those weapons he has, I mean, they just acquired Brandon Cooks, Dwayne Allen, they have Gronk coming back, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, Chris Hogan. I mean, I can name off their playmakers on two or three hands. That's how good of an offense they have. And if you don't have a secondary that can compete with not just the best offense in football, but decent offenses, which the Raiders have defense has not proven that they can, how are they going to challenge that type of pedigree?
You know, it's going to be kind of like an old passing of the torch a little bit. I think it's going to be a few years of the Raiders getting knocked down, whether the Steelers or the Raiders or trying to think of any other AFCs, or the Broncos, heck, even the Broncos. I think those three teams are going to be the ones that are kind of, you know, circling around the AFC championship, but I think the Raiders are going to be the one to get there. I think it's going to be Raiders knocking on the door for a few years, and then the final passing of the torch will be when the Raiders finally beat the Patriots in the AFC championship and kind of reclaim their AFC glory that they once had in the olden times.
Now, there was obviously reports earlier in the offseason, I don't know if you saw this, Sam, but I believe you did, that Tom Brady's wife was on a CBS This Morning, and she basically came out and said, look, Tom's had concussions, he doesn't like to talk about them, you know, blah, 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 and then she kind of got scrutinized for it. What do you think about that? Tom Brady's going to be 40 years old soon, pretty bad concussions. Maybe we're not clear on that, but if it is, do you think, how long do you think he should play?
you know what, at some point you got to know when to hang up the cleats. But for him, it just seems, you know, a little bit odd how he's doing so well and continuously doing almost better than he was when he was, you know, in his 30s. He's doing almost better as a 40-year-old. Listen, you can't deny the greatness of Touchdown Tommy. I think he's probably got 3 or 4 years until he really has to stop, you know, playing. But, you know, why stop when you're doing so well? I mean, Bill Belichick is awfully has chosen to win now with the trading for Brandon Cooks in those 3 first-rounders. So he's using Tom Brady's good years left, and I think after that they're both going to retire, and we'll see him off into the sunset together.
Now, do you think, because I've had this theory for a while now, do you think Tom Brady, after being suspended and winning the Super Bowl, is the greatest FU in sports history?
You know what, that's you can't really write this stuff, obviously, but sports is amazing like that. That's just how it goes. I don't think, you know, I think Tom's a little bit above that. I don't think he has personal vendettas like that. I'm sure in the back of his mind he was kind of like, yeah, haha, take that, Roger Goodell. We all know, well, who knows how, what really happened and how much he knew. But I think Touchdown Tommy's a little bit higher than that. I don't think he wanted to say haha to Roger Goodell.
No. Tom Brady might be higher than that, but Peyton Manning last night, he had some low blows at the ESPYs. You know, what did you think? I just for a second, what did you think of his opening monologue last night?
I didn't know Peyton had that much personality, to be honest with you. I thought he was kind of a bland quarterback, but he turned out to have some great jokes, and I thought he did a great job hosting the ESPYs. I mean, it's been a year, and he still hasn't, you know, done anything like coaching wise, or, you know, he hasn't made any moves about what his career after football will be like besides his commercials for Papa John's or anything like that. But I think he showed a little bit of personality, and who knows what the future holds. But I think he did a great job. There was that low blow on Kevin Durant, but if Kevin Durant was involved with that, I thought, you know, it's all good fun. But, you know, I think, yeah, he did a great job.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually think that Peyton Manning would do a great job in the announcer's booth. I mean, if they're hiring Tony Romo and Jay Cutler.
Yeah, you might as well. Yeah. Someone who's actually good at quarterback.
Exactly, I was going to say. All right, finally, since we're talking a little NFL action and we're in the Bay Area as of right now, and, you know, we live here, Marshawn Lynch coming to the Raiders. What do you think about that?
I think he plays 10 games. He has a standard running back season. I don't know how well he's going to do.
You think in 1,000 yards?
That's going to be hard to say. I think it depends all on how much he actually plays. I think if he stays healthy, he's going to be dominant. He's still early 30s, which is, you know,
31.
Yeah, and when you're a running back, you only have a short shelf life, so let's see how he holds up injury wise but besides that, I think, you know, he could carry that Raiders offense quite a bit more than Latavius Murray could.
Okay, thank you, Sam. And I want to get one last take out of you. Who's your breakout team for 2017-2018 in the NFL?
Well, breakout, or who do I think is going to do the best?
I'm talking breakout team. I'm talking about someone that didn't make the playoffs last year, someone that's a little, you know, kind of like the Falcons or the Cowboys of last year.
Oh, okay. Easy. I know this is kind of a popular take, but the New York Giants. I mean, you got Eli Manning, the 2-time Super Bowl winner. You have that explosive wide receiver core. I don't know who they have at running back, but I don't, you know what, I don't think it matters. And they have that young defense, and I'm pretty sure the Giants were the only team to beat the Cowboys twice last year. So I think we're looking at the Giants as potentially a, you know, 1 or 2 seed in the NFC playoffs. But you know what, I have to say, even though they're not a breakout team, you can't put it past Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
That is very true. Thank you, Sam. Sam's going to be with us next segment too, as Nick's joining back, and we're going to have a little round table. All the guys, we all actually had an English class together this year, senior year at San Marin High School, and we talked sports, so I decided to have the boys on. Anyways, you're listening to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu.
Got a girl from the south side, got braids in her hair. First time I seen her walk by, man, I about fell up on my chair. Had to get her number, and it took me like 6 weeks. Now me and her go way back, like Cadillac 6. Body like a back road, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my hand. Doing 15 and 30, I ain't
taste like honey, so thick and so sweet. There ain't no curves like her on them downtown streets. Body like a back road, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my hand. Doing 15 and 30, I ain't in no hurry. I'ma take it slow, just as fast as I can. In the tall grass, with my lips on hers, on the highway to heaven, at the south of a smile. Get there when we get there, every inch is a mile. Body like a back road, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my head. Doing 15 and 30, I ain't in no hurry. I'ma take it slow.
Welcome back to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, broadcasting live on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. I am joined now back with Nick Moliaris, who was with us earlier talking a little NBA action, and Sam Greenville, who was with us last segment, two of my very good friends back from high school. Boys, how you doing?
Doing great, Taylor. Doing great.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm ready to get, you know, talking.
All right. So I thought a great way to end off our show would be to do a little roundtable with two of the smartest guys I know in the sporting world. And the question I want to pose for all of you, big picture, 2016-2017, was this the greatest year in sports history? Now hear me out. The Cubs win the World Series, first time in 108 years. The Patriots come back from a 28-3 deficit in the Super Bowl, greatest Super Bowl comeback ever. The Clemson Tigers win. I know that's Nick's team. Tigers win the national championship game on the final play versus the perfect Alabama Crimson Tide. The national championship game prior to this one with Villanova hits a game winner. And the Warriors go 73-9. Lose in seven games, and then come back, add one of the best players in the league, and then come back and go 15-1 in the championship. Or was it 16-1? They went 16-1,
yeah. Yeah,
they went 16-1 and come back and win themselves a championship. All of that being said, is this the greatest year in sports history?
I don't think you could ever put one, you know, label as the best year in sports. I definitely think it was one of the more memorable years in sports with that many late games or down to the wire games. That's just insane. I mean, four championships that came down to the wire is just absolutely crazy. It's hard for me to say, you know, this was the best year in sports with the Warriors losing like that. But you know what? I got to hand it to the Cavaliers. That was obviously a great comeback. And now that we won,
Oh, I forgot to mention. I'm sorry. That was Cleveland's first championship, too, in about 50-something years. Yeah. I mean, just the history that took place over the last 365 to 400 days is astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, yeah, I'll put it as one of the greater years in sports history, but you can never put a, you know, best year ever in sports. Nick, what do you think?
I'll disagree with you, Sam, and I'll say it is the best year in sports history.
Wow. What the?
I mean, you can think about the team accomplishments, but think about all the individual player accomplishments, even just in the NBA. Stephen Curry was the unanimous MVP, first time in the league's history. And then next year, the MVP of the league is Russell Westbrook, and he averages a triple-double. First guy to do it since Oscar Robertson. But yeah, the team achievements, my team out in South Carolina, the Clemson Tigers, they got it done against Alabama. I've never lost my voice in a championship game before. And the Warriors with their great record and in the regular season in 2016 and the postseason this past June was pretty incredible. So I will agree that is the best sports year.
Yeah, Nick, I agree with you. I also think just the unbelievable amount of history that was made, too.
Yeah.
It's not just the championship performances. It's the Patriots coming back from the largest deficit. It's the Cubs with the 108 years. It's Steph Curry, unanimous, triple-double. Like you said, it's all of these things that have never been done before, haven't been done in so long, that all accumulated into 1 year.
Yeah.
It's like, if you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Aaron Judge breaks the home run record. It's like all of these things now that you thought were impossible are now possible.
I think that's going to start happening a little bit more with sports. Obviously, we're looking at, you know, kind of the start of a new century in which people are more athletic than they ever have been. I think science is now melding with sports a little bit. So now, you know, we're kind of getting the convergence of the two, and we're getting the most the best athletes we've ever seen before. So I think we're kind of starting to see a lot more of these, you know, spectacular human feats. I don't know about championship games, but I'm definitely thinking, like, in the case of Aaron Judge, Russell Westbrook, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, I think this is just the beginning of very talented superstars, you know, because we now know all the science behind what makes, you know, a player bigger, stronger, faster, smarter. The film, you know, technology behind it. I think we're starting to look at, the, you know, a new age of sports with mixed with science.
And the leagues, I would have to assume, too, that the fact that, you know, in the NBA, it's a less violent game, that it's turning more to a three-point shooting game where there's more points. You know, in football, with the concussions and stuff, it's a little less violent. Baseball, pace of play, all these things, they want more offense. The games and the leagues themselves are shifting, so to beef up the stats almost.
Yep, that's just how it's going to go. I think we had a little bit of a rut in the early 2000s, if you'd agree, Nick. I think the last, 10 years, it's been like the year of the pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
No one likes that. And then obviously, you know, the three ball has, you know, changed the game. But, yeah, Nick, what do you think about?
Baseball needed to make a recovery after the steroid era. And I think they're doing that pretty well, especially with your guy Aaron Judge, Taylor.
Yeah. Well, I also think, and Nick, you played baseball and you follow it a lot, so this is a question for you.
Okay.
As you said, they needed to make a recovery, and I think what they did is they flipped way too much. If you're looking at it like a pendulum, they were way too many home runs. They were way to the right. And then they decided, all right, well, we're going to cut all the PEDs out of the game and everything like that, and we're going to make it pitcher dominant. And then it swung way too far to the left, and, you know, you had all these guys with the 1.9, you know, 2.0 ERAs, and the games were 2-1, and they were just boring.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about how the Giants won all their World Series in 2010, 2012, 2014, the headliners was their pitching. If you think about it, Matt Cain in his World Series career has never lost a game. He's like 6-0 or something like that.
And Bumgarner.
And Bumgarner was incredible in 2014.
He won the whole thing by himself.
Absolutely. I think that's such a great point, that they tried to take the offense away and almost overdid it. And it kind of became, like, not as fun to watch. But now that you got guys like Bryce Harper and Aaron Judge and Mike Trout even, who can hit absolute blasts, 500 feet. I think a lot of – the Home Run Derby the other night was great. I mean, the guys were hitting the ball to the windows in Miami in Marlins Park.
Yeah, so. And you think like that makes it more exciting to watch, most definitely for the casual fan is home runs. They right. want to see action. The whole love affair with the NBA and the three-pointer is it's action. It's instant points. It's right. you know, we don't necessarily like to see defense and all that. Yeah. All the fundamentals, we're not big into that now. We just like to see Steph Curry pull up from, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's just a detriment to how, you know, today is where we want things fast. We want things, you know, exciting. And what's more exciting than, you know, high-scoring games, 120 to 115 or, you know, 28 to 35 football games and, you know, 8 to 5 baseball games. You know, like the last, you know, 20 years, it's kind of been dominated by defense in almost all the major sports. And I think we're now looking at offensive taking over. And I think, yeah, it's we're kind of living in this transition era right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if we're living in this transition era, who's the next great dynasty in sports? Obviously, the Warriors are right now, so we can't call them the next great one because they're living in it. The Patriots are still, you know, at the end of their dynasty. What's the next one?
Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, wow.
The process.
No way. Okay, we're looking at three teams. We're going to go Cowboys, Timberwolves, and Yankees. Those are the next big three teams.
Four,
right
the Philadelphia 76ers.
Let's see them actually win a few games before we...
Let's see them stay healthy.
Yeah.
No, Sam, I agree with you and not with Nick on one simple fact. The Philadelphia 76ers have proven nothing. Ben Simmons hasn't played a game in the league. Joel Embiid has played about 32. And Markelle Fultz had a disappointing year in college and got hurt.
He played on Washington, and they barely played anyone good.
Yeah.
They played Oregon, and they made the Final Four.
Did they win?
No.
I think Markelle Fultz scored most of his points in garbage time. I don't have the stat on me, but I'm pretty sure most of his points came in the last, like, 5 minutes of losing ball games.
That might be true, but then he still got picked with number one. How did that happen?
I mean, he's a talented player, but Boston obviously saw something why they wanted to trade down and get Jason Tatum, who's actually performing the best in Summer League right now.
No way, Lonzo. I'm kidding.
Actually, speaking of Lonzo, I wanted to bring this up. What do you guys think about him so far in the Summer League? Is he meeting expectations, below expectations?
Go ahead. You go first, Nick.
First of all, I want to shout out LaVar Ball. He's a genius.
Please stop. Please.
Wow.
This is a serious podcast. Do not.
I think the expectations were a little high. Nobody put those kind of expectations on Markelle Fultz.
It's Summer League.
I know. That's what I'm saying. In Summer League. He did not have a great shooting game his first game, 2-for-15. That was a little disappointing. But then he bounces back with a triple-double. And last night he scores 36 with 11 assists and 8 rebounds. So I think he's learning and he's getting better. And I think that he will be an all-star someday.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree that. I think he's going to be kind of the face of the Lakers going forward right now. I don't know if he's going to be the biggest star. But I think we're kind of looking at a miniature version, and please do not take this seriously, but he's not Magic Johnson or anything close. No. But I think we're looking at a smaller version of Magic and Kareem with Brandon Ingram. I think Brandon Ingram's a real star. And I think Lonzo is going to be the guy that kind of, you know, the pairing that, you know, brings L.A. back into, you know, being dominant again.
Okay, but hypothetically, right? LeBron James is at that game last night watching Lonzo Ball. Hypothetically, LeBron leaves Cleveland next summer.
Oh. Yeah.
He goes to the Lakers. Paul George goes with him. You know, maybe someone else.
No.
They cannot make that work.
Does it work with Lonzo and Brandon Ingram? And no, it doesn't. So what happens to Lonzo there?
His production drops down like it did with D'Angelo Russell.
That's two passers right there. And then you kind of stop Brandon Ingram from any growth he might have to sit behind Paul George and LeBron James. And I don't think the Lakers, and I think Magic, surprisingly, is smart enough to know to get LeBron James would kind of halt the progress that they've made because LeBron is his own system.
But you're telling me that you wouldn't take LeBron James. If LeBron James went into Magic's office as a free agent and said, I want to be a Laker, I want to bring back Showtime. You sign him?
No, I actually say no. I know that's a shocking...
You say no to LeBron James.
He's his own system. You're focused on the future right now.
Sammy.
I don't think you bring in LeBron James if you want these young guys to end up being superstars.
Okay, you're going to say no to the best player in basketball.
Nope, a Kevin Durant's the best player now.
There you go.
That's
talking.
Right.
Now you're talking.
Wow. Okay. So 2 points here that I have to address real quick. And then, Nick, you can join in after. One, Kevin Durant is not the best player in basketball.
I know. I'm just giving you guys a hard time.
Okay, just making sure. Two, LeBron James has made 7 straight finals. The Lakers.
The East is terrible.
The Lakers have barely won 7 games. All right? So if you have the opportunity to get the best player in basketball through the last 13 years, he might be older, you're going to sign him. Magic Johnson's going to sign him. And if they don't sign him, well, there's going to be pitchforks and people and angry mobs.
Hey, the Sixers said it best, trust the process. And I think, you know what, going with the young guys, that's the future. I know people are upset about what Celtics and Danny Ainge are doing, but it's more about the future than it is about, you know, adopting LeBron James, who's going to be what? Obsolete in about 2 or 3 years, or he's going to fall off a cliff in about 2 or 3 years. No. And you still have to compete with the Warriors and the Spurs? No, you can't. No, I don't think you're going to be able to. I don't think that would work out for the best. LeBron, or that's not the best interest for the Lakers.
LeBron is not dropping off at all. He's still just as productive as he was when he was 25 with the Heat.
Yeah, but his game is all physical. And at some point, we saw him slow down in the finals. He's going to slow down again. He's not going to be able to compete against the Warriors this year. He's going to get more tired. He's averaged the most minutes in the playoffs and the regular season this year. And I don't think that he's going to be able to continue this high level of excellence.
I think the finals is a bad example because the only other player that played well in multiple games in the finals was Kyrie Irving. I was at game
Who's
two.
Young.
Yeah, I was at game two of the finals. And J.R. Smith played one of the worst basketball games I've ever seen a human being play. He had 4 fouls in the second quarter, and one of them was on a Durant 3. He had no help but Kyrie Irving. Kevin Love was absolutely getting destroyed by Kevin Durant in the post. It just wasn't fair. And then he had to guard Kevin Durant on switches. He got switched on to Steph Curry. LeBron had no help, and he still averaged a triple-double in the finals.
All right, so Nick, after that take, you must think that the Cavaliers are done then, right? That it's this season they're going to make the finals. They're probably going to lose in 4 or 5.
Whoa.
And then it's over, right?
Yeah, because I said it before that the Celtics have a legitimate chance to make it with Gordon Hayward.
No way.
I think that they get a year. The Celtics get a year of experience playing with each other under the belt. If they can re-sign Isaiah Thomas next year, I think they make like they can make the finals in 2 years.
I think it depends on Tatum. Jason Tatum's all that he's supposed to be. I think that's the key to their kind of future. I don't know about Gordon Hayward. I don't think he's got the defensive capabilities to.
And Jason Tatum does.
Probably better than Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward can't move his feet.
All right, okay.
I'm not even going to address that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I'm going to end this with a final thought. The Golden State Warriors, right? How many more titles we got?
4.
I can't say based on how fluctuant, you know, free agency is.
Yeah.
If everyone kind of stays put and stays the same, Nick, I agree, 3 or 4. I think we're looking at probably a three-peat. And then Kevin Durant will leave sooner or later. Yeah. So we'll have one more championship probably with Steph, Clay, and Dre by themselves if everything stays put of right now.
But do you think 2 years down the line that this will be Durant's team and maybe Clay will leave or Draymond or someone else will leave?
Clay will probably be the first to leave.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just because I always hear his name in trade talks, which seems absolutely ridiculous, especially with the Paul George trade talks.
Well, just today with the Paul George trade, Indiana wanted him. For Paul George.
Yeah, and I would
hope the Warriors didn't listen to that.
They didn't. That's why he's still on our team.
Yeah. Well, remember when he was almost going to be traded for Kevin Love?
Thank God.
And we'll end that there because we have 2 championships.
There you go.
Exactly. Hey, boys, thank you so much for
coming
on.
Thank you, Taylor. I had a great
time.
Thank
you, Taylor.
Hope to be on soon again.
Yeah.
No, we're definitely going to have you guys on. All right, you've been listening to In the Zone. I'm Taylor Williams, broadcasting live on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM and radio.dominican.edu. Have a fantastic week.
Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that. It's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are.